Recording?
Yeah, recording.
Whoa, Rudy, you're a little slow on the uptake there tonight.
No,
something going on?
Yeah, it's just I'm down in the dumps, because Dan hasn't responded to my affections yet.
Man, maybe you just need to let it go. I mean, this has been 3-4 podcasts that you've derailed with your obsession with Dan Maruschak. Maybe it's time to move on.
Man, I'd like to, but it's just so difficult. The beard is just so fascinating. It's like hypnotizing.
Hypnotizing?
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, Rudy, I want to be supportive here, but that sounds a little mentally ill.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Dan's really my first man crush, so...
What about Callan S? You got over Callan, didn't you?
Yeah, I got over him pretty quick. But I don't know. Dan, if you're out there, I just want to read you a little poem about our love.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, I believe in your love. I believe in our love. No matter what I know, our aim is true. Every step we take, our love will grow stronger. I wish our two hearts could be one. And that's my poem.
Are you hoping to engage in a little bit of active battle with Dan?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, wait, that's Final Fantasy. I don't know. Tales of Grace.
Oh, yeah. What is it called? I think it's like the something active battle system or something.
Okay, so it's another active battle system.
Yeah.
Are you hoping
to... Active time battles. Hold on, we have to get that right if we're going to pretend to talk about active time battles. It is active time battles.
Oh yeah, ATB, that's what it is, yeah.
But,
all right,
seriously.
Now, getting that out of the way, yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Stan Love.
Alex and I have been talking. We've been talking a little bit behind your back. We're getting alarmed.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, we're getting worried about you. I mean, every podcast, you have to talk about your love of Dan Maruschak. And the thing is, we feel like Dan maybe isn't being very good to you.
Well, maybe you guys are right.
We're very worried about you.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe I should just forget about it.
Maybe you should. But...
I mean, Dan's beard is meticulous, but it's not really worth my, you know, my mental health to be worried about.
And, honestly, this is... I mean, he's totally ignoring you. This is bordering on emotional abuse and neglect here. Have you thought about going to a shelter? You know, there are places that can help women like you in situations like this one.
Dude, I know. He totally blew me off here.
Rudy carefully sidesteps that.
Yeah.
The missile just, he takes a step to the left and the missile just glides right on by.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a very important thing to talk about, Rudy, just because, as we all know, Easter's upon us, and as any common man knows, Easter is the age of fertility.
Ah.
So, I can see why you're a little emotional right now, considering, you know, that Dan has been the only one that you've been pining for some time. It might be seasonal love.
Yeah.
So if you can, like, you know, if you can soldier on, if you can, like, keep your emotions at bay, this might pass.
It could.
April is the coolest month, after all.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
T.S. Eliot was not fucking kidding.
No, he really wasn't.
There's a reason why all the school shootings happen in April. But anyway, wait, segue.
Yeah, ba-doom-tsh.
What we wanted to talk about today, this is episode 35, by the way. We didn't even say that at the beginning because Rudy's...
Oh, is it?
post-Moruschak depression was holding us down. Yep, episode 35. Today, we are going to talk about... Okay, I'm going to be honest here. We're hijacking the podcast.
Hijacked.
Yep. Sorry, Alex, but Rudy and I, we've got guns, we've got explosives, and you're going to obey our demands.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the first time you hijacked it.
That's true. Hijacking our own podcast here.
Yeah.
To talk about Misery Tourism games.
Yeah.
We've talked about other people's games on the podcast. Tonight we're going to talk about our games.
Yeah, so, it's our turn.
Tune out right now. You might want to say, fuck it. We're not going to talk about anything interesting tonight.
Yeah, if we haven't already offended you and you haven't already tuned out, now's the time to tune out.
Yeah. Now's the time to turn on really gameologists or whatever.
Yeah.
Sharkbone or one of those people who like can afford to have intro music or something.
People who give a fuck.
Hey, we can pretend to do our own intro music.
That's true.
Yeah, the intro music just means you paid somebody else to write something for you. We actually do our own intro music and follow, it's like a 3-second clip of it, yeah, and recording.
Yeah.
I know. You could probably do quite the awesome club mix of that.
Yeah, like dubstep or something.
And then follow by recording. Yeah, anyways, regardless. Yeah, moving on.
Anyway, yeah.
Rudy and I launched a indie RPG website last Sunday. Called Misery Tourism Games. We talked about it a little bit on the previous podcast, but we're taking this podcast over to talk about it. And the next week we'll go back to talking about other people's games and things we might give a shit about. So what we thought we'd do is we'd let Alex interview Rudy and I. So because the last time Rudy and I tried to talk about our game, we rambled for an hour and a half and it was incomprehensible gibberish.
Yeah.
So, Alex, you're the host. You're the only host tonight.
The host with the most.
And Rudy and I are guests in our own podcast.
All right, so first of all, in order to make this official, I am no longer Alex when you refer to me this episode.
Okay.
You will refer to me as Mr. Lipton.
Mr. Lipton.
Yes.
Yes.
And I will ask you at least 10 questions, and about half of them will be related to what we're talking about, and the other half will just be random stuff.
That's cool, Mr. Lipton.
Okay. With you.
All right. So, first question. What inspired you to make your own website? Or to make your own officially... It's basically a company. What inspired you to make your own company?
Well,
we're not incorporated or anything. Legally, I guess it's a partnership.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, we just didn't see anybody making the type of games that we make, and we thought that we could enrich the world with our game design and all kinds of important stuff.
Right. Well, no, I mean, I think you're right. No one was really making the kinds of games that we wanted to play, and there weren't any other sites out there really making the kinds of games we wanted to design anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is we had a backlog of little games that we had made either for competitions or just to play with our gaming group, and we found that most of them really clustered around one topic.
Yeah.
For one set of topics. They were really all about basically voyeuristically experiencing suffering in one way or another.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Misery tourism, as some people might call it.
Right. Which is where the title came from. I mean, there's a big controversy. Well, controversy, if you consider, stuff that RPG Pundit says controversial. If that qualifies as a major controversy, and I guess it does within the closed indie RPG community.
He's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, misery tourism has become a way to slander indie games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, Gray Ranks is just misery tourism.
Yeah.
You play as teenagers during the Holocaust. Boy, you guys must be having a lot of fun doing that. You know? And you know what I said? We're taking that fucking turn back.
Yeah, we're taking it back. We're recouping that turn. Now. That's our word now.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't use that anymore.
Yeah.
But we can call each other misery tourists whenever we fucking want.
Yeah. It's like a term of endearment.
Right. RPG pundit and the rest of you RPG site dudes, hands off.
Yeah.
That's our word now.
Our word.
But really, we thought, you know what, there's nothing really intrinsically wrong with making games about human suffering.
I don't think so.
But there really isn't. You're not hurting anyone. I mean, one of the coolest things about playing an RPG is you can sit down and experience things that would be dangerous if you experienced them in the real world, or depressing, or ugly, or miserable.
Yeah.
But you can experience them as fun within the confines of your D&D group. And whether that's being, you know, shot in the face by an orc, or, reenacting Columbine.
Yeah.
It's a nudies game, but, you know, or other forms of suffering, whatever. But whether it's purely fantastical stuff, or whether it's based on real life tragedy and suffering and things like that, the point is that within your gaming group, it's safe. And it's a cool way to defuse some of those subjects and to look at those subjects in a way that you might not dare to look at them otherwise, because you know that you're not hurting anyone.
Yeah.
You know, because you know it's a safe space.
Yeah, and just to be clear, it doesn't have to be like serious face role playing, you know, like, oh, this is so serious, you know, we're mired in this and we're depressed and we're trying to, I guess, live the experience, kind of, I don't know. But basically it can be fun just like any other game, just like a parlor game or something. It can totally be fun.
In fact, some of our games use parlor game mechanics.
Mm. Yeah.
All right, so going from that one question that turned into three different answers, what appeals to you the most about those styles of games? Is it just the freedom to express yourself, or is it being able to explore something that you're very interested about?
Well, for me, I think a lot of it is exploring things that I'm kind of interested in. But to kind of break down the experience of those, you know, these, like, kind of, I guess the word would be scandalous or maybe offensive.
Hands off.
Yeah, hands off, exactly. But to kind of break down these hands off types of topics and just have fun with them, there's something liberating about that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, to be able to really demystify it.
Mm.
You know, I think that's the right word. I think that's the word I'm looking for, is demystify. Or to take, because some of these subjects, you know, oh, I don't know, racial issues, school shootings, you know, sexual violence,
yeah.
Various economic issues, they have such, they have an almost supernatural power in our society.
They do.
To control dialogue, and to repel people,
mm-hmm.
to keep people from looking at them closely, to keep people from looking at them with any complexity. It's just, oh my god, that's awful. And that's the only thing you can really say in polite company. Oh my god, that's awful. Period. Yeah. You can't do any kind of, you know, you really can't explore those topics in depth. And I think because there's that almost supernatural quality to them, because they're seen as being uniquely terrible.
Mm.
And I think that something about role-playing games, something about the dissociation that happens in role-playing games, the space between you and your character, between reality and the imagined scenario, between, you know, what you're saying and what you actually think or believe, that space really allows you to dig deeply into those topics in a way that's, you know, like I said before, in some ways safer because you're with a group of your friends, but also that lets you, in the same way that fiction, in the same way that film can look at those topics from a bunch of different perspectives and not be constrained by the idea that, oh, you're expressing one single opinion about that topic, and right. That opinion offends me. Or you're talking about my experience, and the fact that you're talking about my experience offends me.
Right.
That ability to move into an imaginary space really lets you go after these topics and do all sorts of things with them
right. That
you couldn't do otherwise.
And like you said, nobody really gets hurt when you do it in a game. It's like, right. Hey, you know.
Alright, so going off the idea that that there's a lot of topics out there that if you are that can be offensible to somebody's ears. what exactly? Crap! I had the question already in my head. Now it's gone. So yeah, if he's exploring the idea that there's like negative connotations to certain words, what makes it so appealing to try and explore that kind of situation? Is it just because of something like, is it just because it's something that isn't discussed, so that way you want to see what the real answer is inside your own head? Or what's going on with wanting to know taboo topics and investigating what they really mean to you?
Well, I think you're right that there's a curiosity factor there, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I think that leaving that curiosity unacknowledged is less healthy and less honest than acknowledging it and trying to work through it and
absolutely.
Trying to explore these things. Because, you know, I think saying, oh, don't go there, kills the discussion. It kills the topic. But there was something else I was going to say about this, and I need to remember it. So what were you going to say, Rudy?
Well, I think, like you said earlier, these topics almost have a kind of supernatural glow around them.
That's what I was going to say.
There's some wonder in exploring that. You know, just like there's wonder in exploring magic and, you know, medieval fantasy and Dungeons and Dragons. There's some real wonder in exploring, you know, school shootings or sexual violence, I guess.
Thank you, Rudy, because that
or racism.
Exactly
or...
That is exactly what I was thinking. That was exactly where I wanted to go, and then I forgot about it. And I think you said it better than I could. But yeah, there is. It's almost like for people who haven't had these experiences. Mm. And some of our games are historical, where
right.
they take these experiences and they put them in a fantasy setting or a science fiction setting or whatever.
Mm.
But for people who haven't specifically had these experiences, there is something almost magical. Maybe it's black magic. But
voodoo.
Certain, right, voodoo, hoodoo, yeah. There's voodoo. A certain, a mystique, an almost supernatural. You know, it is like going to a fantasy world in some ways.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a horrible fantasy world. But it is like experiencing a different reality in the same way that, you know, Thulu Tech is about experiencing, you know, fighting the Elder Gods with mechs. These are games.
Is that what Thulu Tech is about?
I don't know. You know, from the game that we tried to play, I think it was kind of like...
Something like that.
I think there are aliens, too.
Yeah, there's like alien Thulu coming out the woodwork. It's a really weird game,
yeah,
but...
is entering an extra-dimensional space.
Yeah. Dead air.
Okay,
dead air,
so going on from that, what do you hope to gain by releasing any of these type of games out for other people to see?
We're hoping people might play them.
Yeah.
I mean, we have...
What I'm saying, going off of that, if you want people to play them, what do you want them to try and experience with those rules?
Oh, well, I think we want them to experience exactly what we were talking about. I think we live in a society that is... where taboo topics have a lot of control over the dialogue, and an almost unhealthy level of control over the dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I think that fiction and film, as I said, and art have been granted like a special pass to enter that space and to talk about those topics.
Right.
That you, and to deal with those topics that you can't otherwise deal with. Can't otherwise talk about, or if you express an opinion about them, you're inviting a conflict. And you know, rightfully so, because people have strong opinions about these things.
Oh, yeah.
But I would like it to be possible for games to enter that territory, too. And in some ways, other people have already opened the store. You know, Jason Morningstar did with Grey Ranks, the Rust Belt also... Nicotine Girls, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
We're not totally in new territory here. I think we take it to a new extreme. I think we're encouraging people to focus more on the bad guys in these scenarios than you usually would, which is something that film, once again, has already done. You know, that novels and books and music and movies, that's a space they've already entered. They've already moved beyond simply allowing you to look at the lives of heroes in terrible situations, to look closely at the lives of the people responsible, you know, the perpetrators.
Yeah.
The terrible people in the terrible situations. Yeah. And I'd like to see games move into that space. And I'd like to see, since we're talking about what we want from players, I'd like to see players become comfortable with playing in that space without feeling like it somehow morally implicates them any more than it morally implicated Ed Norton was in American History X,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Any more than it morally implicated Ed Norton to play a neo-Nazi in American History X, or any more than it morally implicated... or morally implicates any actor who's asked to play, any more than it morally implicated Kevin Bacon to play a pedophile.
Yeah, the Woodsman. Yeah.
You know, we don't say, oh man, Kevin Bacon played a pedophile in The Woodsman. Kevin Bacon must want to be a pedophile. Kevin Bacon must be a pedophile. Although he is a kind of creepy looking guy.
He is.
But we don't say that, and I think... As role players, we need to be comfortable saying, you know, because I play as a character who is terrible in this way, that doesn't mean that I, as a person, am terrible in that way.
No. And I think you pretty much said everything that I wanted to say. Especially with that last part.
Is that good? Going off of that, the idea that a lot of people are comfortable seeing other people portray... let's say, like, not negative people, but people that they don't respect in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely makes it a lot more interesting for role-playing itself because of how personal role-playing is.
Right.
Because there are a lot of people who consistently tie who they are with who they are playing as.
Oh, yeah. See, that's a good point.
To try and get people to actually play a different character, you know, the way RPGs are meant to be played. They're meant to be played as changing the role that you normally want to be. Like, it's okay if you want to, you know, play a character you like playing as, but it doesn't mean that you should always restrict yourself to being that way.
Hmm.
And so going from that, what kind of games are you guys, what kind of games do you already have released for people to see and play that represent some of those, you know, bad characters for people to try out and, you know, see how they feel about them when they play them?
Well, we have three games on the site right now.
Yep.
One of Rudy's games and two of my games. Rudy, do you want to start out talking about yours?
I have Student Zombie on the site, which is basically a game about school shootings, but it's mixed with zombie fiction. Two things that kind of, I think, might go together a little more than people think. But,
yeah.
I don't know, I mean, basically, I don't, without getting into the game too much, basically it's kind of about the relationship between fiction and reality, and how people see that. But it's also designed to kind of be, you know, a fun experience. Kind of like a ride, you know, like going to the Disneyland and going on a ride, that sort of thing. Because, I mean, you can do all the things that, you know, you see on TV, basically. That's one. You can live the headline. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
so
kind of...
what you're saying is... Well, hold on. So what you're saying is we can go on Magic Mountain and still have fun at the teacups?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can you continue what you're saying there?
Magic Mountain.
Rudy, you said Disneyland, so I was trying to...
We're going to Disneyland.
Well, Rudy, you said it's about the relationship between fiction and reality, and I think that's interesting because this concept has its roots in a situation where there was confusion between fiction and reality, right?
Yeah, there was actually a kid who wrote a story. It was like a zombie story set in his high school. I guess if you've ever seen, like, High School of the Dead or that anime show there, it was sort of supposed to be something like that. But he actually got in some legal trouble for writing it because it was kind of unclear if maybe he wrote it as some kind of revenge fantasy about his classmates or if it was just all fiction or what it really was. I think eventually they let the kid off. But yeah, it's sort of about that type of, you know, about how sensationalism can kind of color the narrative as far as something and make it into something else.
And I mean, zombie fiction always has seemed to me to be a kind of revenge fantasy, or at least
yeah.
The kind of psychosis that you see in school shooters, where they believe, you know, there's this, you know, usually it's one or two lone individuals, you know, this small band of survivors, and they believe they're surrounded by, you know, they believe they're continually in a hostile environment,
yeah.
And that everyone around them is a potential threat,
mm-hmm.
And their answer to that is violence, you know, is headshots,
yeah.
As opposed to... And it's the same kind of irrationality that you see in zombie films, where it's like, no, get out of the fucking mall. No, get far, far away from people. People are your problem, you know, and distance would help you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that same solution, you know, it's like, nah, now I'm going to stay here and shoot and kill as many of the zombies as I can, you know, before I die.
Right.
And it's that same kind of psychosis, really, so I thought it was a pretty cool dovetailing of the two things.
Hmm.
You know, just hearing that, the idea of like, because isn't the premise where it's like school shooters, they think that there's a zombie apocalypse happening on the day that they want to go shoot some people?
Well, yeah, the way it starts out, I guess, is that they go to their school ready with weapons and stuff to shoot it up. And then zombie apocalypse breaks out. Now, as to whether that's, you know, true, a real zombie apocalypse, or whether it's, you know, kind of in their heads, that's something, for the players to decide, but...
Well, yeah, relating that to what Will was talking about, how, you know, how sometimes it's relatable in terms of, like, the survivalist and the paranoid guy who's about to do an actual shooting.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when, I don't know if this is 100% fact or not, but a lot of the times that when school shootings are happening, it has to do with people who are delusioned with reality as it is.
Right.
And they're not fully aware of what they're actually doing because they're just going off, like, fear instincts.
Right.
For every single reaction they do. So, I think just from the idea of the premise for the game and the actual game itself, it's almost like real life interpretation of how those kind of people feel.
Yeah.
Where there's helplessness and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And they feel vindicated doing this because there's all this stuff coming at them.
Right.
And then they'll be eaten alive if they don't do anything about it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's kind of an abstraction of that.
Right, right. And even if they're not totally delusional, and some of the shooters have been, like, Charles Whitman, for example, when he was probably maybe even hallucinating because they found a sizable tumor in his brain after they took him down. But even if they're not, you know, that delusional, being able to commit an act like a school shooting is the foundation of that is having the delusion really that you and your buddy are the only real person there. You know, you're the only one who really matters, and
right.
that everyone else is in some way subhuman.
Right, it's you against the world, basically.
Whether they're zombies or bullies, you know,
right.
it's a way of creating that separation, you know,
right.
where you imagine yourself to be human and valuable in a way that your victims aren't.
Right.
Alright, I think that's pretty good for just talking about that game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the other two games then.
Okay.
And get an understanding of what those are.
Okay. Which one should I?
Do Dance Macabre first.
Dance Macabre, okay. Dance Macabre is probably the only game of the two games, of the three games, excuse me, on there right now, where you aren't required to play as strictly a terrible human being, you know, it's not just an exploration of depravity. What Dance Macabre is basically, how do I put this? Basically, it's my continuing obsession with death turned into a role-playing game. Well, it was a entry for the January 2011 round of the Ronnie's game design competition. When Ron Edwards just brought that competition back after its extended hiatus. And I don't remember what all of the terms were that he offered that you were supposed to design the game around, but two of them were Old Skull.
Yeah.
Old and Skull. And immediately, the first thing that came to mind, probably because I spend way too much time looking at things like this on the internet, was the idea of the memento mori, which basically means, memento mori means remember you must die. That's a very rough rough translation of Latin. Yeah. But, memento mori is art that's designed to remind the person who's viewing it of their own mortality. Mm-hmm. And one of the most common forms of the memento mori is a kind of still life. You know how in still life you'll have, like, a bowl of fruit or whatever? That's the cliche still life, right?
Yeah.
It's a bowl of bananas or something with an apple in it. But this is a still life that combines those kind of mundane household things, like a vase with flowers in it, or a bowl of fruit, or, you know, common household items, with the image of an old, weathered skull. And I think one of the most famous ones has an hourglass on one side, a vase on the other, and then the skull in the middle. And that juxtaposition is supposed to mean, you know, even in your mundane, everyday existence, even when you're doing your normal day-to-day chores, death could be there. You know, death could fucking, and grab you at any moment. And it was, you know, the reminder is, you know, you need to be prepared for that. So, Dance Macabre is a game about the memento mori. And the Dance Macabre itself is usually, it's a depiction, it's another artistic depiction. It's art that depicts skeletons dancing with humans from different social ranks. So you'll have skeletons dancing with the Pope and with peasants and with merchants and with children. And once again, the idea is that we're constantly in this kind of dance with death. We're death doesn't discriminate. Death is going to get the Pope, just like it's going to get, you know, the homeless guy you gave 50 cents to on the street. So with that in mind, I don't know. I sat down and I spent several hours looking at Wikipedia pages, like, about various things related to the Dance Macabre and the Memento Mori, and this game is what resulted. And basically what it is it's a game about confronting death. It's a game about being prepared for death, and the mechanics and the character creation stuff is based around creating characters who are not yet ready to die, and then the game leads you to deal with, or to refuse to deal with, those things that are keeping you from being ready to die. And eventually you have a direct confrontation with death, who's played by one of the players. And you have a dialogue. Yeah. And I keep saying, and least professional podcast on internet.
On internet.
But anyway, long story short, it has a musical chairs-esque mechanic that keeps death rotating throughout the game, so different players get to play as death. So every player is going to have a player character who eventually dies, and every character is going to have an opportunity to play death. And at the end, you get to turn the tables on death and confront death and make him answer the tough questions. Mm-hmm. So, that's Dance Macabre. So I think you can see how it's misery, it's still misery tourism, even if it's not playing terrible people. Death is sort of the universal misery.
Yeah.
That definitely is a strange subject there, since it's something that everyone's going to face.
Yeah.
And you're playing it out in order to, like, it sounds like you're playing it out to kind of see how comfortable you are with the idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. It's also supposed to be fun, and in our playtest, it actually is a lot of fun, because how often do you get the opportunity to basically tell death to go fuck himself?
Yeah.
You know, it's not something you get to do in life or in death. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to look at it from a serious business perspective, you get to ask yourself those tough questions about death, and you get to ask, you know, someone else those tough questions about death. But it's also, really, I think, you know, how much of even the escapist stuff that we experience really has to do with death.
Yeah.
You know, D&D, tying it back to the school shooting thing, I remember right after Columbine when everyone was talking about how Doom was a murder simulator. Well, in a very real way, D&D was designed to be a murder simulator. I mean, before it was really a role-playing narrative game, it was a combat simulator.
Right.
It was a fantasy combat simulator. So, but killing things is at the core of that game. Mm-hmm. And death is really at the core of, you know, our big-budget action movies that we go to sit down and eat popcorn and just enjoy. You know, it's at the heart of everything. So I think that you can have, that there's some vicarious fun, or not even vicarious, some honest-to-goodness fun to be had by a imagining, by dealing with your own mortality, by imagining how you might deal with death, or by, really, with this game, imagining how some fictional character might deal with death. I think maybe I'm just, you know, fucked up, but I think you can get your rocks off there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think more than any of the other games on the site, this one is one where the experience is really going to be built by your personal group, and the experience is going to be defined by basically who you have playing with you. Because, you know, every group is going to have a different take on death. Every group is going to have a unique setting. There's provisions for unique roles and that kind of stuff. No, it's just, yeah, it's, I think it's, the whole experience is really something that can be created, crafted by the whole group. And it reflects, and it'll reflect, basically, the feelings and the maybe insecurities and maybe, you know, other aspects of the group that's playing it.
Right. And it's designed to be very open and customizable. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is, every experience with death is unique. And I wanted a game that could let you have a bunch of unique, different experiences with death. And usually I like a more focused, structured design when it comes to setting and characters and scenario and stuff. But this game I really felt needed to be.
Okay. So yeah. All right. So tell us about the last game, then.
Alex, you sound a little exhausted.
Hey, well, he's not Alex. He's Mister. Mister what? Mister. Fuck.
Oh, Mister.
Yeah, it's Mister Lipton.
Mister Lipton. I'm sorry.
I know my intern. My intern Alex showed up and, you know, told you that we're gonna have this interview, but he's not here now, so. Move on.
Oh, yeah. My apologies, Mr. Lipton.
Yeah,
but
sorry,
you sounded
Mr.
a little exhausted or taken aback.
Well, yeah, it had everything to do with, like, you guys were going very deep on the whole death thing. And it was just like, it was a sigh of relief. It's like, okay, we're done talking about this.
Don't have to face our mortality anymore tonight. So, Passing. Okay, Passing is the last game to talk about. And so far, this is the game that has gotten the biggest response, both in terms of people saying, this is a pretty cool game, and people saying, Jesus Christ, how could you have made this game, let alone expect people to play it? Which honestly surprised me a little bit, because I expected Student Zombie to get, in both of those areas, to get more of that attention. Passing, honestly, was written very quickly. But, okay, Passing was another game that was, what's the word I'm looking for? Inspired by, you know, an outside situation. And I find this, I work best when someone says, hey, why don't you make a game about this, as opposed to me sitting and staring at a wall and saying, I'd like to design an RPG. Someone on Story Games, I believe, proposed doing a collection of games about vampires. And I think it was supposed to raise money for the Red Cross or something. And I saw it. And I was drawn to it because I hate vampires. I mean, I've never in my life found any work of vampire fiction to be even remotely interesting. And because I'm such a navel-gazing douchebag, I'm fascinated by the fact that I don't find vampires interesting at all. I mean, even as a kid, when I was really into, like, ghosts and the supernatural and shit like that, vampires just didn't interest me. So I thought, I'm going to make a game about vampires. I'm going to find a way to make vampires interesting to me. So, this is another game inspired by Wikipedia, or at least designed by Wikipedia. So I went browsing through Wikipedia entries about vampires. And one thing I really keyed in on, really honed in on, focused on, was the way that vampires are really tied into all of this troubled history of racial paranoia. Mm-hmm. You know, things like blood libel that was used basically as a during, you know, the Black Death and other plagues and moments of hardship. In medieval periods and even long after that,
yeah,
it was basically customary if something bad happened to you to say, oh, are there any Jews around? Well, it must be the Jews.
Yeah.
You know, and there was this belief that basically that the Jews used that Jewish communities or Jewish individuals would use the blood of infants or the blood of other innocent, virginal people in order to cast spells and use magic and to, you know, to hex and curse communities they were living in or by. And a lot of the vampire lore comes from that, or is at least very closely tied to that. So vampire lore already had a real foundation in ugly racial paranoia. And so you throw that in, and so I was looking at that, and I didn't really want to do another medieval game because Danse Macabre is heavily inspired by medieval sources, and I didn't really feel like a game where about that. I felt like that would be so distant from most people that it wouldn't have much resonance, you know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't have much effect on people. And I just happened to, at the same time, be reading a lot about the early 20th century and the rise of, well, the late 19th century and early 20th century and the rise of Jim Crow and the rise of sundown towns in the South and West in our country. And when what a sundown town basically was a town where if you were in it after dark and you weren't a white guy, you were pretty much fucked. They were going to lynch you. Or they were going to chase you out of town. And, you know, they would have put signs up in town to that effect. You know, if you're black, don't be in town after dark.
No darkies after dark.
Yeah, I'll let Rudy say that. But anyway, and I think it was that sundown town thing that really made it all come together. Because you think about vampires, you know, and vampires can't live in the sunlight. You know, and in some ways, this racism couldn't live in the sunlight. You know, the Klan only comes out at night. You know, the vampires only come out at night. Crosses only get burned on lawns at night. And at night, the residents of these little southern towns would literally dress up like ghosts.
Yeah.
You know, and perform, you know, and perform a type of exorcism, really.
Yeah.
Is what the Burning Cross is. So I saw that, and I thought of, you know, the rituals that people use to exorcise vampires, and that kind of dualism there, you know, where it's really the vampires, it's really the parasites, you know, the people who are dressing up at as ghosts and who are this kind of dark force in the community, they're the ones who are going out and doing the persecuting. They're the ones who are looking for, who are trying to perform the exorcism in that case, and who are looking for the vampire, who are looking for the scapegoat.
Right.
So anyway, I threw all those ideas together, and passed things what came out. And it's basically a game about a group of white southern gentlemen, they call themselves, you know, the white southern aristocracy in in a little sundown town in the Jim Crow South in the early 20th century, and they realize that there's a vampire in their community. And there is. One of them is an honest-to-goodness vampire. But one of them is also a black guy who's passing as white. As often happened, by the way, back there, because race isn't a thing. Race is a psychological construct. So if you can pass as white, you are white. But anyway, so these guys, the paranoia takes over. And paranoia is another big thing in the vampire folklore and mythology. So the paranoia takes over these guys' minds, and they go out hunting for the vampire. And maybe they catch the vampire, or maybe the poor guy who's passing as white gets caught in the crossfire. Yeah. But anyway, and it uses playing cards as a mechanic. But that's the game. That is my exceedingly long pitch of a very short game.
And just to clarify, basically it comes down to...
Well, hearing from your...
Sorry, Alex. Or Mr. But I was just going to say that basically it comes down to you can either lynch the vampire or you can lynch the black guy. At the end, you know, you have to decide.
Well, exercise the vampire.
Yeah, exercise the vampire. Yeah.
All right, now I will have order in the actor studio.
Sorry, Mr. Lipton.
So please,
Mr. Lipton.
Please, for a second year, will you stifle yourself?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now. But what Will was saying earlier about most of, about the references to, using Jews as, like, scapegoats.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like the common thread around vampires was that it was used as a threat against minorities to keep them down.
Mm.
Yeah. And
so going off of that, it makes it a perfect setup of using a vampire and a black person, because they were basically the minorities of the group during that time period. It's like accurate, it's historically accurate at the same time of, being able to do exactly what would probably happen in that kind of scenario.
Right. That's pretty much it. You hit the nail on the head there. It's about racial paranoia and about how much the vampire folklore has to do with racial paranoia. And it's just taking that and transporting it into a new time period, a more recent time period. And, the Southern Gothic stuff gets into it as well, and there's really a lot of different ways you could take it. What really amazed me, and this is my last thought on the game, is just how many points of overlap there were between vampire folklore and our general culture of the kind of shit we think about when we think about vampires and the realities of the Jim Crow South.
Hmm.
And that's my final thought in the game.
All right, so now that we have all the serious questions taken care of here, it's time that we go for the not-so-serious questions as we do in the actor studio.
Why so serious?
Okay, so...
Take it away, Mr. Lipton.
Thank you. I'm just trying to collect my thoughts here because... Even though this is a non-serious question, it has somewhat serious ramifications based on your answers.
Right.
So, if you were to grow a rainbow, what fertilizer would you use to enhance the growth of said rainbow?
Skittles. Rest in peace, Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon.
Okay, that is one thing that I wanted to talk about. I said I was done with passing, but the game was designed over a year ago, but, it's a game that's set in a closed community in the South where a black man is possibly unfairly singled out and scapegoated because of the paranoia that's festering in that community. So I made it like a year ago. It wasn't intended to be a comment on the Trayvon Martin thing, but when I was putting it up, I was like, shit. But yeah, Skittles is my answer. Skittles.
Alright, Rudy, what would you do?
I think I would have to go with the blood/body parts of people of all races. Because then you have a rainbow. Rainbow
true.
Of all races. Everybody gets included.
Very interesting. Very interesting on your answers. Alright, on to silly question number two.
Terrifying answer this silly question will get.
Alright. So, when you make a sandwich, what kind of sandwich do you usually make? And what ingredients do you use?
Right?
Well, I rarely make my own sandwiches. Usually my mom makes my sandwiches. But when she makes them, it's usually turkey and
any condiments, cheese, something?
Oh yeah, I put mayo, whipped cream, or not whipped cream, Miracle Whip. mustard. Mmm. Yeah.
Any veggies on there, Rudy?
Yeah, because my mom makes them, she usually puts some veggies on because, she wants me to eat healthy.
Aww.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much what I have on my sandwich. Maybe a pickle sometimes.
Yeah. I'm a turkey sandwich kind of guy, too. Turkey, lettuce, tomato, Italian bread. One thing, no condiments at all. I eat my sandwiches dry. I eat my salads dry. I don't put dressing on my salads. Everything plain. Dry. And I also peanut butter and jelly because it's easy.
Yeah. Got all of peanut butter and jelly.
All right, so last semi-serious, silly question. What is the one thing you are most afraid of that is quite silly if other people heard you talk about it?
That's a good question, man.
It could be saying words, it could be like a personal, what's the word? Not obsession, like a perversion of something. It could be something like that. It doesn't have to be sexual, but if your mileage may vary based on who you're speaking to about that.
Probably think of a strange phobia that I have. I mean, I'm afraid of a lot of things. I'm afraid of pretty much everything, Like, basically everything. But, specific strange phobia.
Is it a strange thing that people will find silly?
I don't know, Rudy, you got anything to start it off?
Not really. Trying to think what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of a lot of things also, but none of them are really like silly.
Well, Rudy, you're afraid of basically going outside because you might see a woman wearing sandals.
That's true.
It's kind of silly.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Do you want to? I mean, we're pretty deep in the hole here.
Yeah. Well, Yeah. I don't know. Basically, I'm afraid of going outside for many different reasons, but that's one of them. Because I guess I have a foot fetish type thing going on. And, if I
and
did...
you're afraid of having a boner.
I'm afraid of having an erection, yes. So, yeah.
It wasn't so hard.
Yeah, no, that wasn't that hard. See, I thought of that, but I didn't think... I was like, that's too easy.
Yeah.
So, I don't...
Well, you have anything really strange and crazy?
Not really. And I was trying to... I'm racking my brain for stuff, but I can't really think of anything else.
I don't have anything funny. You know.
It doesn't have to be funny. It can just be an actual answer.
I don't know.
This is an interview, sir. We have to try and get some deep answers along with thing that you came here to promote.
Well, I'm...
Because it can't just be 40 minutes of you talking about how awesome you are and to go see your movie. Oh, wait. I mean, to go download your playtest and have people talk about it. You can't just do that. There has to be... some serious, deep thoughts on the actual person.
Mm.
Well,
and I will be pissed off if you violate that the house of the actor studio and myself, Mr. James.
You don't want to violate Mr. Lipton.
Nah, wouldn't want to do that. I don't know, I have a phobia of driving.
Mm.
Pretty phobic about driving. Don't like to get behind the wheel. I do it when I have to, but it's something that I have a lot of phobia of. I'm very fearful about.
Hmm. All right, then.
Righto.
That's all for the questions in Actor Studio. I'm James Lipton, signing off.
Oh, is Alex back?
Nope.
Damn you, Lipton! What did you do to Alex Swingle?
All right, I'm back. That was pretty interesting. I do like it how he almost sounds exactly like me without like not even trying to change his inflection.
Yeah, he does.
It's pretty amazing.
Oh lord.
Okay. So, what are we at right now?
So, yeah, we're at 102 now.
Okay, so we're probably moving towards wrapping up then. So Alex, were you listening to our interview in the green room? Mom's basement?
I was actually playing with marbles. Gave them as like a souvenir to play
Ooh,
with.
Marbles.
They're James Lipton marbles, so they're pretty cool.
Oh.
They have like little portraits of like movie actors and stuff.
Pretty awesome.
That is
pretty I thought they would just be like a reproduction of his giant round head. So, Alex, what did you think of the interview? Lipton went pretty hard on us. I mean,
yeah,
that dude is. That dude's like.
Oh, yeah, he's very hardcore about his interviews. He does not like to screw around, and that's what I've been told. It's like, have you seen any of his interviews? Like, he goes pretty deep sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Finding out what kind of shampoo Jennifer Lopez uses. I mean, holy shit. It's not TMZ stuff here, guys.
No.
This is serious.
Serious business.
Well, okay, I guess. So, are we done for today? I mean, I didn't get to speak much, but...
Alex, do you want to talk about what you heard, maybe? I don't know. You want to... Or anything.
Yeah, any final thoughts on any
stuff? We downloaded our podcast by James Lipton, so...
Yeah.
Why don't
you... Well, I mean, honestly, I was so, like, entranced by playing with the marbles that I really didn't hear anything, so... I mean, I guess I'll have to listen later.
Alrighty.
Yeah, that's pretty much my final thoughts, is I'll have to listen some other time, because I wasn't paying attention to what, you know, he had to say.
Yeah.
That's a clever escape, sir.
Oh, and just to, you know, let everybody know, if you can in any way, shape, or form get Dan to contact Rudy, it would be greatly appreciated, because even though, you know, Rudy's trying to get away from, from loving Dan too much.
Totally.
It still hurts him inside, and he needs somebody to talk about it. Yeah, he needs closure.
Definitely needs closure. So we can provide closure.
Yeah, if we can get somebody to at least have Dan talk to Rudy in some way, that would be great. So, anyone listening to us right now, please, if you have any love in your heart for a stranger's sadness.
It is Easter, so spread the love.
Help a brother out.
Yep.
And get Dan to talk to me.
Indeed.
And that's all I have to say for today.
and since I didn't mention it this time, if you want us to playtest your games, we're still doing that.
That whole thing.
We have no game on tap right now, which is why we didn't do one tonight. Send your game to Mom's Basement at miserytourism.com.
Yep.
Really? I thought we just wanted to have a serious discussion.
Oh, well,
we didn't have a game?
No, we didn't. We didn't have a game this week.
Nope.
But we also wanted to pimp our site.
There's that.
The Chinese wall is going back up between Mom's Basement Podcast and Mystery Tourism Games, and we're going to go back to talking about shit that isn't shameless self-promotion next week.
Yeah.
Okay, then. We'll see you guys next week.
All right. Is that it? Are we done?
Yeah. Let me stop recording.
Have we stopped recording yet?
No, we haven't quite yet.
Shit.